Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday, July 13th edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel, as always, joined by Joel Conan and Dennis Dick on this show today. We got a lot. We got Delta earnings. We got the reversal in Fastenal. We got a BABA breakout. We got Target with some good guidance that may drive the whole retail industry up higher today. Snapchat got an upgrade. CTL is getting sued by the state of Minnesota, so we're going to talk about all that and more. Our two guests on the docket for today. First up at 8:15, our commodities expert, Angie Setzer. She is the vice president of grain for Citizens Elevator. We're going to talk about all the grains and the corns and the wheats with Angie. And then at 8:35, going to be joined by Jeff Hirsch. He's editor-in-chief of the Stock Traders Almanac. Joel, how's it going today?
Not too bad here. Some nice movement in the S&Ps. We got up within a few ticks of that all-time closing high, which was also your 10-day high of 47.50. 46.50 is the high. That's the bogey on the upside. On the downside, we're just hanging out here near the lows of the pre-market session, just above your close there at 40 even. But let's see if we can catch a little bit of bounce. Below 40 even, look out. We're looking for yesterday's intraday low of 34.75. We have crude oil trading down 40 cents at 45.09. We're unchanged on the session, so keep an eye on the close if you can get back up there. Gold and silver mix, gold up 50 cents at 12.1970. Silver down a few pennies as well, so kind of quiet here in the gold market. Dennis, you just must be very happy over the Snap upgrade. You probably are selling everything in your portfolio and buying Snap.
You know what? It could kickstart it for a couple days, but so I'm actually interested as a trade, you know, of potentially buying Snap. Stiefel's influential. So Stiefel's coming out here this morning. Spencer, give us the details. They're upgrading this to a buy?
Yep, they're upgrading it to a buy. That's pretty much all. From a hold to a buy, that's pretty much all you need to know.
There's a lot of analysts that were probably already at buy on this, weren't they? How many analysts, can you look at the pro fast?
Yes,
I'm curious,
I can.
How many analysts are at buy right now? Yeah. Because the one thing, you know, and the one concern obviously is analysts chase price. And everybody who's at a buy might actually have to come down to neutral. So props to Stiefel because they weren't at buy. So they actually can go up to buy here. How many analysts right now still have
mostly buys and neutrals. Only one, the only sell was Summit Redstone, but that was back at the IPO. I don't know, they haven't changed it since then, so they're okay. still on the sell.
Well, they've been right. They're the only one that's been right since the
right.
IPO.
Everyone else is neutral and buy. I'm seeing it's about split 50-50. There's maybe a one or two more neutrals than buys, but it's mostly split down the middle.
Okay, so it's up 40 cents here. Nice upgrade from Stiefel here this morning. At least there's some analysts defending it because nobody else has come out to defend the stock here at all. That's why we've been in a free fall here. 300,000 shares have already traded. I mean, I would say, you know, I don't know if I'm buying it up here 40 cents on the day, but, you know, these things tend to get forgotten. And if it comes back down to the 15.21 area, maybe you try it once. Maybe you could try to put in a double bottom in that area. I don't know if that's going to happen today with the upgrade. You know, this thing could actually probably even see a little bit higher today. But, you know, over the next couple of days, comes back, leaks a little bit. Maybe I'd take a shot down there at a double bottom. Takes out that 15.21 low, though. Again, I want no part of it. Long term, still don't get the story. And long term, I'm still bearish the stock. Short term, bounce.
We got a good level to look at. 1580 is your pre-market high, your high from yesterday, 1575. So you plow through there, you know, maybe some short-term sellers at 16. Big old gap to fill between 1636 and 1695. And this stock is not out of the woods by any imagination until it could get above 17 and have a couple closes above 17. Don't think it's getting there today.
Let's jump over, and I just want to talk briefly about the target numbers. And tell us what, you know, Target reported here this morning, because we got Target, TGT, in the pre-market chain up over 5%. It's a huge bounce for Target here this morning. They must have had some pretty good guidance they came out with.
Target is increasing their Q2 guidance. They expect an increase in same-store sales. They see Q2 guidance greater than the $1.06 was the estimate, and so they see it was 106 to 115 was their range, and they see greater than the high end of that range. So good people shopping at Target, apparently.
Big nice bounce in Target here. One concern is there's a looming 54 level. You know, that's where I'm just looking, where we found some support back in May. Had three bottoms in that same area. Now we come into that area. I don't even know what the pre-market high is. I haven't looked at the pre-market chart. I'm just saying 54 might put a lid on it. Second thing is, and I just use Fastenal as an example of this. Yesterday on the show, when Fastenal had the big jump on the good earnings report, what did we say? We said sellers might come into this because there's so much overhead supply and there's so many people who are underwater. It's the same story in Target here today. There's a lot of traders and a lot of investors who are significantly underwater in this thing. And once 9:30 rolls around, sometimes they come in with their selling shoes on, happy to get a relief pop. But, you know, to say, you know, this is going to be the next driver to drive this thing up, I don't know about that. So I'm actually, I think I'm personally a seller of the Target bounce. What's pre-market high?
I got all the way up to 54.65.
Whoa. That's a big bounce. Okay, well, I wish I would have been up to take advantage of the 54.65 pricing. Obviously, I wasn't up to take advantage of that. What time was that at?
That was...
Right on the pry of the numbers. When that was like 6 o'clock this morning when they came out with that data?
Between 7 and 7:15, that bracket.
Oh, right? Wasn't that? Okay.
Yeah.
So... anyways, so it got to 54.65. That seems way overdone. So it's already leaking here. That's already one concern. Gets up in that 54 area, I don't know. Like, is it going to give it all back like Fastenal did yesterday? I don't think so. But I do think there's some sellers up here lurking. And I think there's lots of, you know, we always say price is memory. This traded between 54 and 58 for a long time. All those buyers who bought the stock in April, May, and June are underwater. It's coming back near some of their pricing here. I think some of them probably are going to say, thank you for giving my money back, and I'm out.
Yeah. Also,
so I think there's going to be sellers.
Yeah, also your shorter-term traders, they picked it up under 50 bucks. This is the best possible news you can get. Dennis, 54 is kind of acting as an intermediate resistance after you made that 54.65 high. So keep an eye on 54, old support, new resistance, pre-market high 54.65. And, I mean, if you get really lucky on this thing and you try and go for a gap fill here, you need to get up to 55.33, but be important what happens off the opening print. You are getting some sympathy moves in this, and one that really needs a sympathy move here is Costco here.
Oh, yeah.
And it's getting a little bit of a pop. Let's see what the volume is on this, see if anybody's getting excited.
23,000.
That's not bad.
That's some volume for $151 stock. It's some volume. But remember, we just had a pop in Costco. Remember what happened? They came in and sold it. That was, I think, was that an upgrade? What was the reason for popping 2 days ago?
Was it
their own numbers? It was their own numbers,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, they gave some comparable or same.
We've already got – so here we are. It's the same story in Target here. We've already been down this road before. That makes me more bearish Target here, up, you know, at 54. I like the Target. I like it from a short side trade at 54.
All right, I know you're really stuck on that one, Dennis.
I don't know. I keep going back, you know, and it's because, you know, it's just overhead supply. We're playing overhead supply, bouncing on weak stocks. You know what? Rachel Shasha on yesterday, and she made a great point. You know, if you're not an option trader, you can still take something obviously important from her interview. And what she was saying, buy, you know, the strong stocks on weakness and sell the strong stock or the weak stocks on strength. So Target's your classic example of selling a weak stock on strength here this morning. So I don't know. I'm probably because I pound the table this much on it now, they're probably going to be wrong. Anything's going to go up to 55 bucks today. But I'm just can't see, you know, buyer or sellers not materializing a little bit here in Target.
All right, let's just talk about the Costco two. You're clearing the pair of highs here. You had it, well, not pair of highs, single high at 153.60. That's pre-market high, just above that. A lot of open terrain here, so I don't think you're going to see the same thing that you saw on Costco when it popped up to 162. Looks like it got a lot of room to run here. You got a gap to fill up to 154.09. So if I was jumping on a sympathy play, I think Costco. Also, you got a good support to lean on here. Double bottom at the 151 area. So if you're trying for a swing trade, you know, $2 there, there's your stop out. And like I said, a long way to go to get any kind of retracement of this move here from basically a 30-point move, 15. That would take you up into the 167 area, but that's certainly not going to happen today.
No, it's not going to happen for a long time, I think, because there's still Amazon's coming, you know, and they're still coming after Costco. They're still coming after Target. They're still coming after Walmart. That's why they got the institutional players out there who will be like, maybe I should take some of this. If I bought it in the last few days, maybe take some gains. If I was bought it before, maybe cut my losses. Walmart, same story here this morning. I mean, Amazon's still coming. Walmart's is up a buck in, almost a buck in sympathy here. All kinds of overhead supply up at 76 on Walmart. Not sure if it can get up that far here today, but it's trading up at 74.80. So lots of sympathy moves here with Costco or with Target this morning. You're even seeing other retailers like Macy's trading up. You're seeing Kohl's trade up. I mean, it's dragging up. The XRT itself is trading up 0.67% here right now. So you've got all the retailers all partying this morning because of these Target numbers. I just don't know if the party's going to get crashed here or not yet.
It's just they've had such big dick. I don't know if we can find a wager on this one here, Dennis, but I mean, I think it depends on the individual issue, but man, these things are due for a bounce and they got a lot of ground to cover. So shorts that we're trying to cover on weakness are now going to have to try and cover on strength. Going up in the chat here, Spice is asking you, Dennis, is there a difference between resistance versus supply or support versus demand? You touched on that briefly.
Okay, yeah, and I would say, you know, just in my own definition, I would say yes. Resistance is clearly something you see on the chart. So resistance, you know, is a number and, you know, some classic ones. Just going back to what we were just looking at on Walmart, you can see how he had all those tops around 76. I would say that's resistance. When you have a stock in a downtrend and you don't have a specific point figured, but you just see, you know, a stock has traded up there for a long time and it's been going down, then any type of bounce, you have overhead supply just because there's so many people who have bought the stock over the last few months that are underwater. People don't like to lose money. People want to, you know, say, I'll sell when it comes back to my pricing point. So when you have a stock that is in a serious downtrend, you get a bounce. You have all those people who have bought, you know, over the last few days or few weeks that all of a sudden maybe got their money back. They come in and they want out. And that's why it's tough for stocks who are in the doghouse to really start getting that big rally, because you always have that overhead supply, that hang of people who have bought the stock earlier and are now underwater. So when you have stocks breaking out to new all-time highs, it's a completely different story. There's no pain. There's nothing up there. You know, take it, for instance, you know, a stock like Alibaba, which actually just broke out to a new all-time high here again. You were going to say that one, Joel?
I had it on
Baba,
the chart.
Yeah, so yep. Baba up at 149. There's no pain here now. There's nothing up here because everybody who owns the stock, everybody who's ever bought Alibaba is now up money. So it's air above there, you know, and that's why there's no overhead supply on anything like that, because the stock's never been up there before. Everybody who owns a stock is up money right now. Now, that doesn't mean a stock that's at an all-time high can't go down. I'm just saying it can go up a lot easier than a stock that's been under significant pressure because there's no overhead supply.
Yeah, that's it's a difficult concept to get it, you know, a handle on, but it can certainly avoid you, you know, getting caught up and shorting stocks, you know, once they break out and, you know, just get into areas of no resistance. The one thing Dennis mentioned here on the Target, and a little bit different from, you know, my approach, is I look for like exact highs in the market, like you had this high in the 53 handle in Target. But Dennis looks at going back at all this congestion here at 54. It held up there, had a nice bounce after 54, and then it gapped down through it. So everyone that thought, oh man, I'm long at 54, close to 56, I'm in good shape. Boom, you have the drop down through there. now owe those buyers for 3 days, 4 days in May, and then several days in April. They're looking at that area. 53.75 is your last print here. 54.65 is your pre-market high.
So just watch all your retailers today. If Target does indeed hold on to these gains, and Target is going to be your leader. So when I'm trading sympathy plays, you want to leave Target on your screen no matter what. Because if Target starts to leak, you'll start to see the leak in Costco and Walmart. So keep an eye. If Target, you know, catches a bid and starts to rally, you might see that still continue to show strength in the other stocks as well. So no matter what, if you're trading sympathy, keep Target on your screen. It's going to be your leader in your retail stocks. But you got to watch them all. You got to watch the entire retail sector here today. You know, even stocks like GPS hasn't traded here this morning. It is bid up, though, in the pre-market. So when you see Macy's catching a bid, Kohl's catch a bid, the one consideration here is that there is a lot of people short this sector. So if, you know, for whatever reason, you know, you get a stock that's going to hold on, and if Target can hold on, you know, we're just giving you scenario analysis here. Personally, I don't think it's going to, you know, I think it's starting to close up on the day. I just don't see it taking off to 55, 56, 57 because of overhead supply. It can do it. But if it does do that, you've got to be prepared. And obviously, you got to, you know, if you're short the thing, you know, you want to give yourself, you know, always have an out. You can put on any trade. Make sure you have an out. Make sure if you short something like that, make sure you know where your out is. But you want to keep an eye on all the other retailers here today because there's a lot of people short this sector still. And there could be strength spilling over. We're already saying Macy's is already trading up 1.5% in the pre-market. Kohl's is trading up over 1% in the pre-market now. Nordstrom, nothing there yet. But, you know, that's also got the private thing going on. So it's kind of its own thing right now. But, you know, probably show a little bit of strength. But the Gap you could think about. You can even think about a dog like Abercrombie & Fitch, A&F. You know, this thing has been going down, straight down for 3-4 days. Could this help it? You know, what's Abercrombie & Fitch have to do with Target? Really nothing. Just the fact it's a retailer, though, and it does sell clothes, and you got Target taken off. So it's not going to hurt a stock like Abercrombie & Fitch.
All right, 8:16, we're going to take a quick break. Grab our first guest, Andrew Setzer, commodities expert and vice president of the Granny for Citizens Elevator. So we'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Conan and Dennis Dick, and we're on the line with Angie Setzer, commodities expert, vice president of Grain for Citizens Elevator, and a new mom. Angie, how's it going today?
Yes. Oh, great. Really good today. We're teething, so I feel like I've been kidnapped by a tiny teething terrorist, but the Dora's on now, so we should be good.
All right. Angie Setzer, vice president. Citizens Elevator, and I know I say this every time you're on the show, Angie, but Angie met her husband, Carl, the King of Corn, on our show, thanks to Brianna. Did you send Brianna a watch? Because that's what you're supposed to do in the Jewish tradition.
Is that the social constraints now?
All right. So
never keep up. We'll get her something.
All right. So we had some crop reports yesterday from the USDA. And so let's just, go over some of these. The USDA made it pretty clear they won't do much to adjust yields until they see the forward numbers. So kind of looking, you know, giving you information. I'm telling you, it's not the best information. Let's look at corn here. Let's take a look at the corn market. Tell us about the report and what they're thinking out in the fields.
Yeah, well, right now it's always a hard time to tell, and it always seems like everyone, the old adage in the market anyway, is that by the 4th of July, we have a feel for what the crop will look like. Pollination weather is the biggest factor, and corn production, of course, you know, followed by kernel fill. And a lot of people will argue with you about different things, but to traders, pollination weather, you know, that mid-July time period is really the most important factor in their minds to corn production. So, you know, right now we really aren't sure what to expect for yields, but the USDA has been very clear that production-wise, they don't really do much to change yields unless it's in an extreme situation like 2012 or something like that. Unfortunately, though, it seemed as though the market yesterday or traders going into this report yesterday were really kind of anticipating some sort of bullish surprise. Where this expectation came from, I'm really struggling with, just because The June 30th report was bearish to corn. We shook it off really quick. We ended up trading higher, much higher, that following week and continued those gains the start of last week. But when it comes down to it, we had to really kind of digest those negative numbers that the June 30th report came out with. Lower quarterly stocks would indicate an increase in old crop carryout. Higher acreage than expected would indicate an increase in consumption, a production increase overall. And that's really what we saw yesterday. So I think we caught the market off guard. What really caught the market off guard yesterday was some changes in long-term weather forecasts there. We saw expectations of maybe some cooler weather further out, but we've really been trading off from that for a while now. Every time we turn around, it seems the 6 to 10 or 11 to 15 day forecast is calling for a turn in cooler and wetter, and we just haven't seen it show up. The areas that are wet continue to be wet, the Eastern Corn Belt. The areas that are dry continue to be dry, and right now I'm waiting to get the updated drought monitor to see if we are seeing an increase in drought conditions here in western Iowa.
All right. So corn looks like it's had a pretty three-day sell-off here, taking back big rally going into the report here. Maybe keep an eye on, go back to my 50% retracement there. Maybe see if we can hang in here at 385, 390 here and form another base. Taking a look at the corn market. Oats. We don't talk about oats a whole lot. What do they say in the oats report?
Well, in the oats report, it's just basically your small grains report there. The thing with oats is that we saw a huge increase in oat plantings here a couple years back. I think it was 2014, we saw oats rally to $5 or $6 here in January that year, and it really encouraged a lot of growth and expansion in oat plantings the following year. Well, now we're down. Area harvested right now for oats is expected to be, a million. They did lower yield expectations because a lot of the areas of oat plantings is in the Dakotas. So production's supposed to be down substantially, with carryout, down quite a bit too. And we are having some production issues in Canada, where we tend to rely on our oat imports. So that's been a pretty big deal as well, and they'll probably keep that market supported. The problem with oats or the oat market is it's so thin. It's kind of what we refer to as more of a cash commodity. So there are folks that are in it and are playing with the hedges and things like that. But, the majority of the oat business, at least that I've traded in my life, is small feed mills, guys that use it to grind for cash like that. And they may take a load once a month out of Toledo or something, but there is some big trade out there. But a lot of it is like I said, handled with the cash market side of things in mind.
All right. Soybean futures here. And boy, hanging above here, $10 there. Are we going to see beans in the teens here? Boy, it looks like it had a little two-day rally here. It looks like it's getting a little momentum. Give us your outlook for soybeans, looking at the November contract.
Yeah, I think from an overall acreage perspective and the outlook with carryout and the fact that we do have a pretty solid global supply after the record Brazilian crop they were able to produce this past year, I was really surprised that we did see soybeans test breakthrough and trade into the mid $10 range. November soybeans put in a new contract high here, or at least it may not have been a contract high, but it was a recent high. I had target order in for customers that have been in since last this November or December that filled this last rally. So to see the market rally like it did was pretty surprising. To see it take this big downturn, I really, I struggle with being surprised, just in the sense that we had gained 15% or more. I mean, we've gained a substantial amount of pricing, opportunity. We were up over $1.35 at one point from the low that was put in place here. So, yesterday's report kind of confirmed more of what we know. Beginning stocks came in lower because we have been exporting more beans than we had anticipated this past year, and that's been proven week after week. Production was a bit higher because of the increase in acres, But carry out right now, really ending stock wise, you know, when we started the year, a lot of traders were indicating that we could see that, you know, 500 to 6 million bushel carry out at 460. Last year we were around that same level at this point, and we're down to about 410 right now. You know, I think with soybeans, the thing is demand continues to grow. We continue to feed more livestock. China's need for protein continues to just become expansive, and really develop there. So we've seen a continuation of strength in exports, and, you know, for folks that have been looking at the soybean market these last almost, it seems like 10 years, every time we anticipate carry out to become more than adequate and to grow, we actually kind of take a step back. So now we have to wait for August weather. August is the most important soybean. So we're probably going to test $10. We may even peak below and test, you know, a 975, 983 range, I think, on the November board. But the reality is to me, the downside risk is somewhat limited until we get through August and know what our production weather looked like and what we're going to be capable of producing crop-wise out there.
Andy, shifting gears here a little bit, you talked about some order flow there. And, you know, for some of your customers, I know they're actual producers. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, we talk about the order flow and we talk about the support and resistance here and the stocks and the futures markets. But, you know, how are these farmers doing? I mean, they have it in the field. They know what their production is going to be. What do? They pick a target here. Well, let's say when, you know, the beans are trading at $9, and they say, man, if I could get rid of this year's crop at $10.50, you know, come and get me. How are they? Do those actually create good levels in the market? I mean, who has a better feel than the people that are producing it?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we do is basically we'll sit and as the year progresses, we get a better idea. Of course, they don't know for sure what they're going to produce. They can have general ideas based on conditions at this point and looking at the weather and what they've done. And we tend to talk about the first question I'll always ask is, how many acres do you have? And then I have a targeted amount of, depending on where they're located in the state, I'll say, okay, 150 bushel on corn, 45 on beans, you know, 80 on wheat or something like that. And we do the math and we take a percentage of that to figure out where they should be or how many bushels they should have contracted at this point there. And then we talk about percentages sold and things like that. So for a lot of my customers here, on beans, we're 60 to 70% sold on expected production, above $10. And so that they know they're making money there. They know they're comfortable, but they also know that if the market were to rally or a production scare were to come into play and we were to trade $11, $12, $13, something weird like that, they can still take advantage of that on 30, 40% of their crop as well as a good portion of their crop, next year. So we do the same thing with corn. Of course, this year we haven't had the rally in corn that I've been anticipating. So, you know, we're kind of sitting here waiting to see if something does develop. Reality is we'll probably start putting on some orders here to cover what they have to move at harvest time. So for a lot of my customers, we take into consideration their space needs, you know, what they're going to have to move right at harvest, their cash flow needs, when they have to turn bushels into dollars. And we take all of that into consideration. And then, yes, we build a marketing plan. You know, typically I like to see it built, you know, harvest to January, looking at the year ahead and saying, okay, these are the targets we want to try to hit. We need 375 corn or something of that nature. And so we have to take a look at what we anticipate futures to do on the board itself, what we anticipate spreads to do, and then what we anticipate the basis to do to gather that cash price for them. And we build that up. And the best plan I've seen for guys is to just put those orders in place and let them sit and you know, change accordingly as the market structure changes, but really just kind of stick those in place and let the market do the work for you is the approach that we tend to take with the majority of customers.
Do you file coffee at all?
No, I don't. I do on the outside, out of the corner of my eye, but I really too much time focusing on it.
Wow, that just had a crazy V bottom back here in June.
Yeah.
So I like to see it. Who's looking in here? Downward Dog. Man, that double top up at 130, 120, 130, 130. You take that out, there could be some continued upside, but that's a wild market.
Yeah.
We've been on the line with Angie Setzer. She's the vice president of Rain for Citizens Elevator. She's a great follow on Twitter at the Goddess of Grain. And say hello to the King of Corn there and the little one you got. We hope to speak to you again after the next crop report.
Definitely. I always look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Angie. S&P futures hanging in there, up $3. Not much change here in some of the issues, but we do have some earnings to talk about, right, Dennis?
We haven't got to any of them, and there's not a ton, but we got to go to Delta. DAL has been running ahead of the number. It was running up even last night as well. I noticed some 56 is trading up there after hours last night. Well, this is a story, and we're going to tell you and I'll reiterate it again. I haven't read the report, but I'll tell you, when stocks have run up significantly into the report, we know they have to blow it away to go higher. If they do not blow it away, they almost always go down. If they match, they almost always go down. Even if they beat a little bit, they almost always go down. So often the play is actually, believe it or not, short stocks have been flying up because all the good stuff is already priced in. That being said, now let's get the report from Spencer and we can do a full analysis. DAL.
$1.64 versus $1.53 on the Q2 EPS, sales of $10.79 billion. I did not see a sales estimate, but they beat on the EPS.
All right, so they beat on the EPS pretty nicely. Not good enough here on the stock's trading down. Already 242,000 shares have traded. That is a ton of stock for Delta this early in the morning. It's down $1 here. Now, you know, the other question here, it's kind of the opposite story of the old overhead supply thing. You know, if you have some underneath demand here as well, where people, you know, this has been running up and this has been a strong stock and people look to buy these stocks on pullbacks. Just what Rachel Sasha was saying yesterday on her show, buying strong stocks on pullbacks, you know, seems to work. So okay, report, is this going to work again? You know, it's buy the dip going to work in Delta? I don't see why it won't. So what's the pre-market low here, Joel?
Oh man, this one just was a perfect setup. 53.75 is your pre-market low.
Bouncing against all those lows.
Look at
there.
That. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lows right at the 53.75 area. So there's your number of the day. It holds 53.75. Boom.
I like that number.
I would have liked to see that in the pre-market. I mean, a quad of lows there. So there's a nice bounce. Coming back on the upside, I mean, you could keep an eye on that all-time high it had a few days ago at 55.75, but I would be looking a little bit ahead of that if it did rally into the 55 handle, the all-time closing high. Delta Airlines, 55.48, and that was only 2 pennies better than your high or your close on July 7th. So keep an eye on the 55.48 if it gets back up there.
We got Rob Hood just saying that he had a little problem with the feed. If anybody else has a problem with the feed, let us know here. We'll try to fix that. I just want to comment, you know, the airline, sometimes it's just good to take a look at the big picture here. And I mean, if you look at all the airline charts, LUV, it's a little bit, you know, broken the last couple of days, but still definite uptrend there. Delta, American Airlines, AAL, UAL. I mean, American Airlines is flying yesterday there. Things are all straight up, and it's not a coincidence that oil has pretty much been straight down. And, you know, there's definitely that negative correlation between oil and airlines. So as long as oil continues to remain weak overall, I think you got to be a buyer of the airlines on a pullback. If you start to all of a sudden see oil turn, start to show some life, start to show some strength, that could actually spill over into weakness into the airlines. So one thing I've always traded in my 18-year career is oil versus airlines.
And we'll see if Mr. Buffett ever sells any stock in the airlines. He picked up, I think, some of like this American Airlines, man. I can't even remember how long ago. I think it was well under $40. So we'll see what happens. When we have 13Fs coming out, Brent, again, should they be coming out? August, so we got a little bit of time.
Didn't Buffett buy the end of last year? Do I remember
it?
That?
It was a while ago.
I think it was
ago.
The end of 2016.
Wow.
It was when he bought, and then we didn't know that until, you know, a few months later.
Right. But. So he was buying in the months prior. So he was buying into the AAL in the 36 to 40 range. So so maybe not sell until he sells. Let's see here. Boy, we got the chat is hopping today, Dennis. Should we go with our
we'll
script?
We'll let the chat run the show.
Well, it's 8:35. It's 8:35, so I want to I want to hop off for a second and grab Jeff Hirsch, editor of the Stock Trader's Almanac, and if not, then we will get to your questions. Well, we'll get to your questions regardless, but we'll be right back anyway with Jeff Hirsch.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkan, along with Dennis Dick. Israel behind the glass, and we have Jeffrey Hirsch on the line, editor-in-chief of the Stock Traders Almanac. Jeff, how you doing on this Thursday morning?
Oh, I'm great. Just loving the summer.
Loving the summer. So we finished up the first half of the year. So goes January. So goes the market. That kind of that kind of held true, right? Nice rally in January. Kind of stuck up near all-time highs. Not really going down that much. Just give us your appraisal of the first half of the year and what's going to be important in the second half of the year.
Well, you know, in addition to January being up, it's up in a post-election year, which is, you know, notoriously difficult for the market. And combinations of not just the January barometer, but the first 5 days, early warning indicator of the year, and the Santa Claus rally, all being positive, what we call our January indicator trifecta, in a post-election year is some pretty compelling upside history. So we were taking that to heart and staying in the market until we get into the seasonally weak period, which holds just as true for post-election years, new Republican administrations, and with the valuations and all the rest of our, you know, what we call the five disciplines, fundamentals, technical, psychology, monetary, and of course, seasonal. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of nothing going on in Washington, which, you know, politically seems difficult, and, you know, as a citizen, it's got another look at it. But as an analyst, basically sort of indicates that, you know, not a whole lot's going to come out of Washington. And as you can see, Wall Street's not too upset about it. Yes, we're stalling. It's summer. You've seen the stories about the summer doldrums and the lower trading volume, which we've been putting out for years. And that's kind of where we're at right now as we get through this summertime, where traders take off a little bit more. The volume dries up. And we're prone to corrections, especially in August and September. And I think we rally from there, maybe poke up above, you know, for new all-time highs into the early part of the midterm election year, which I think the mud will begin to sling, and we'll have a deeper correction next year.
Okay, all right. So let's look at some sectors. I mean, there's been a lot of concern that a lot of the rally's been concentrated in very few amount of stocks here: Apple, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, and Facebook. Your top five components in the S&Ps. Are you looking for these to continue to be? They had their little sell off. Goldman knocked them down, but they're back. Is that where we're gonna need? Is we gonna need leadership there? Or they're going to take a little bit, and we've seen some move into value investing. Where's the money going to be flowing to next?
Well, you know, you always need leadership, and leadership tends to shift. We saw it shift, you know, this year earlier with, you know, blue chips, you know, Dow-type stocks. First it was the small caps, the Russell, then the Dow came in, and then NASDAQ took over, and then, you know, sort of runs out of steam a little bit. I don't propose to know exactly where the next leadership comes from, but we find them when we do our stock analysis. And, you know, the stocks that we pick fundamentally screen for value and fundamentally technically right and not too, you know, far ahead of the S&P and not behind it with a lot of other indications. And, you know, we're seeing some sort of off the radar, but big stocks like Arista Networks is one of our big winners from last year. ANET is that ticker. We own some of that. Almost a double for us. It's up about a double, pulled back a little bit with the FANGs. So we'll be looking for new leadership again during that low period, August, September, October. We'll be running our screens and seeing where we can find things. So we're going to let the market tell us where the next leaders come based upon value and technicals and you know, where where the revenue growth is showing up.
All right, what's it? Oh, go ahead, Dennis.
Sorry. Jeff, any thoughts on oil here? I mean, oil's in the doldrums here again. You know, we obviously went through this in early 2016, and it brought the whole market down with it. Now, we're still in the 40s, so we're not, you know, we're still holding on here okay, but there is some concern. There's been some analysts that have come out here and say it's going lower here. First of all, you know, what do you think about oil? And then secondly, if oil does start to leak, does that drag the market down with it?
It hasn't driven it did, you know, a couple of years ago. I don't think it's going to drive the market down as much. I'm not bullish on oil. Seasonally, it didn't perform well, which is an indication of itself when, you know, assets don't perform like they normally do during historical seasonally bullish periods. That's an indication something, you know, greater is at play, something trumping seasonals, and I think that that's what's going on here. We know that OPEC has never really been true to the cuts that it says it's going to make. Russia needs to live on it. Folks up in the Dakotas and such have to, you know, keep their places going. So I don't foresee a big upside for oil. A little bit lower, sure. Breaking through the floor, I'm not convinced that. I think we're in a range with oil pretty much, and we're out of it at this point.
Jeff, I want to ask you about interest rates. Now, I know in your almanac, you give a lot of good information. Right now, I mean, the only thing that really seems to upset the market is, you know, what's going on with the interest rates. I mean, the Fed here, you see, you get a strong jobs number on Friday. Yeah, rates are going up 1, 2, 3, 4 times this year. And then you get this testimony from Janet Yellen that, I mean, all of a sudden she's put this dovish hat on, and that gives a boost to the market. I know it's hard, I mean, because there's been different economic cycles going back when you've done the almanac, but, you know, how much emphasis are you putting on the Fed and, you know, the potential rise in interest rates?
Less than we would normally, because interest rates are so historically low. Yes, they're on the way up, but off of the mat, pretty much. Chair Yellen, a very thoughtful, smart lady, has done a decent job. I'm no Fed watcher per se. I don't know if I have the cred to critique her, period, but she's, you know, trying to secure her legacy. Her days are numbered with this new president, and she's trying to do as much as she can to secure her future and, you know, the future, leave the Fed, not just personally, but leave the Federal Reserve in a place where the next people have something to work with. If you, you know, bullets in the chamber or whatever metaphor you want to use. The market has not really responded, you know, much to the recent rate hike. Maybe it helped shake things a little bit with the things and a couple other scares and some Brexit stuff. But for the most part, it's digested the increases over the past year. And I don't suspect it's going to do much. There'll be a lot of talk from them, a lot of rhetoric. And I don't think anyone believes we're going to get another hike until the end of the year, and that remains to be seen. The wage growth is an issue, and that's, you know, part of the inflation, you know, discussion that's not really showing up yet. Yes, there's asset inflation, there's healthcare inflation, there's other types of inflation, but across the board, it's still pretty, you know, tepid, and it's not something where, you know, is a big factor right now. It's always a factor, but it's not really moving the needle too much, as far as I can tell.
All right, one last thing here, and going through the almanac, I don't know if you do. I know it's very market-related. Do you have any kind of seasonal patterns? We talked about crude as a commodity. Anything on the soft commodities, you know, your coffee?
Oh, yeah.
Any seasonal lots patterns or anything you'd like to comment on?
I mean, cattle and that sort of stuff is in a big seasonal play. I'm along the cow and DVA ETFs. I mean, that's, you ride those things in the harvest. I mean, you know, that's you know, very typical for the softs and the meats to move higher, you know, from spring through fall, especially, you know, there's a little push from back to school with all the meat buying that goes on. And, of course, the barbecuing season and that sort of thing. So over the summer, there's that period. Pork, lean hogs makes a nice low usually around Thanksgiving. And there's a whole host of seasonal things. We're in chocolate right now with our plays in the Hershey and Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory. There's a couple of names we own. When cocoa prices go down, the people that use it as a raw material, stocks tend to do better. So there's lots of things out there. And, you know, just glad you brought that up, because we are in the process of resurrecting the Commodity Traders Almanac, which we got back from Wiley, who didn't want to do it anymore after the 2013 edition. So we're talking with our buddy John Person. We're working out some of the logistics of how we're going to put this thing out, but it should be out in the fall for 2018. So that's a good news for us. And I think, you know, the readers and followers of it have been asking us for it for several years.
All right. We look forward to that. 25-year veteran of Wall Street, Jeffrey Hirsch, editor-in-chief of the Stock Traders Almanac. A great read for anyone that's active in the markets. Glad we caught you, Jeff. We'll get you back again soon.
Thanks, James. Have a great day.
S&P futures just hanging in there at 42.50. Spencer, do you have some news you wanted to pop in with?
I mean, there's lots of news. There's PayPal. There was eBay. We didn't get to
a lot.
What
about JCPenney and toy stores? Did you see that? JAR alerting us to us. JCPenney, and actually, I just went and checked this. It's true. JCPenney has opened toy shops in their brick and mortar locations. What do you think of JCPenney? Well, I think they already sold some toys.
Yeah,
but looks like
they're
going
too.
Full on toys. Are they turning JCPenney into a toy store?
I don't, man. I know JAR's been looking at this one, and it's just been hanging in there, kind of sleepy range here. Maybe we could bust out. To me, that $5 that's the big level. It fell under 5 off its last earnings report, getting back over there. I have some room up to 5. I'm not sure what the implications of this are, but $5 a big level in JCPenney.
$5 is a big level for multiple reasons. And that me reason is that's where securities become marginable at most of your brokers as well. So that's why 5 is not only a psychological level, it's obviously a level where resistance forms, just because, you know, if it falls below 5, all of a sudden there can be issues with people not being able to margin their stock. So that's just a big psychological level. I agree, $5 huge for this thing. I mean, JCPenney, it kind of stinks of desperation to me when you're saying, okay, now they're going to introduce toy shops in all their stores, and I'm just reading that headline there right now. Am I going to go out and buy JCPenney stock because they're trying toys? You know, they have some toys in the stores already. Now maybe they're going to expand that operations. They're trying things. I mean, we'll give them that. They're trying things. And can they get a pop on this? Sure, but I think Joel's giving me a great number of $5.
And also institutions, it's not a hard, fast rule that institutions will not own stocks under $5. I think it's kind of an unwritten rule. So I think that's another reason that you can see resistance at that $5 level. Spinner has a good eye, Dennis. Spinner 213 is looking at the slow move up here in X. And we didn't have an upgrade or a downgrade in it, but we had a...
Yeah, I don't know if you have the note there, but Morgan Stanley came out positive on steel last night. They did cite, there was no ratings changes, but they did cite U.S. Steel. They cited a few others too, but it was X that was the focus of the note. And I don't have it sitting in front of me, or I'd read it to you. I read it earlier, but you know, obviously it's getting a lift from that. Full disclosure, I actually am long as a trade on X as well. I just like it. I think it's starting to break out here too. So I'll limit my comments on, you know, just because I actually have a trading position. I don't like to talk my book.
Okay. All right. 2330 has been the high of the move. We've kind of been bumping up against there in the pre-market. So bonafide breakout here over 2330. This is going to be the third stab at it. So let's see if Morgan can get this going to the upside.
That's why I was speaking of ratings, and there was quite a few other ones. So we gave Snap earlier this morning, but there's a ton here. AT&T, did we mention the AT&T?
Nope.
Downgraded at Bank America. That one feels late to the party here. But anyways, AT&T down. It's been down for a while. I don't know when the stock's going to catch a bid. The yield is now 5.37%. I own AT&T in my investment portfolio. Still looking at putting Verizon in there as well. Verizon keeps getting cheaper every day. But, you know, when I'm in my investment portfolio, I usually like to wait until they stop going down. And there's been no reason really in the last month to, you know, say that these stocks have broken their downtrends, because they continue to go down 2 out of 3 days. So I'll wait till they stop going down before I nibble into some Verizon or nibble into more AT&T.
Yeah, this T chart, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th month in a row with a red candle. That's looking ugly. I want to throw this in my long-term portfolio, too. I just can't turn down those yields. 36, that was a couple monthly lows. This was going back into October and November last year, and I think that's level. We got a little ways to go to get there. We're at 36.53. You get 36, you go 4, 5, 6 lows in there. Then you break through once, you flush everybody out, maybe get a red dog reversal. But 36, I'm definitely going to put a few shares of T, 5.7%. I mean, how can you turn that down in this environment?
It's a big yield. Fastenal, FAST, wild ride for it yesterday. I guess we got this one right. This was one we talked about. Stock had opened up near the highs. We talked about it on the pre-market show because of the whole overhead supply thing that it might find sellers. Whew. It did. I did not see it giving back all the gains, though, and it did. Closed down on a while. Okay, let's talk about this for a second because Fastenal is actually getting upgraded here this morning at Raymond James to a strong buy. I would say I would love the stock to get down to 40. It's the nuts and bolts of the market. It would probably have a 3% yield down there, so it fit my description for an investment. It's not getting there today, it doesn't look like, because we got RJ coming out and defending it, putting a strong buy on it. Stock's trading up 1.5% in the pre-market.
Yeah, what a range yesterday, and that high that it had coincide perfectly with your high back you had in early May. Getting some news here on AAOI, lifting some guidance here. Do we have it halted, or so we can get the news on that? But that's going to lift, just traded up to 73.50.
Yeah, it is halted. It resumes at 9.
Massive short interest in here, too, so could see a move and, you know, lifting some other stocks here. We'll see if how it comes out of the halt. Let's look at AAOI. Someone was asking me about this yesterday, and I think I was looking for a little bit of a move up. All-time high, 75.59. We'll see if that comes into play.
Also, ratings changes. Pulte Home, PHM, that is catching an upgrade at Wedbush here this morning. We've got Seagate. This is one we haven't talked about yet. Seagate getting the beats. TX getting downgraded here this morning at Barclays to underweight. Stock is trading down 3.5% here in the pre-market. STX is starting to get ugly. I mean, it's been an impressive run. Back in April of 2016, the stock was $18. We know it had the run to 50. Well, that is now over. Now it's starting to form an ugly little downtrend here. It bounced the last couple of days, but it's going right back down to test those lows. Not loving the STX chart here as it's fallen another buck and a half.
All right, your pre-market low here in STX is in the 37 handle. It looks like 37.50 is your pre-market low. You've been lower, though. You've been lower than in this issue here. You've had a low of the move at 36.94. So if you want to look for an area of potential buyers, but you are back in the $38 handle. And I'm still amazed here, Dennis, this Western Digital continues to defy, you know, this the Seagate move here. And boy, I was thinking at 85 there, I thought it might have been time to hit the exits, and didn't look at it for a couple days and got back up at 95 yesterday.
Look at that 95, though, Joel.
I know.
That is a looming level. It got up there yesterday. I mean, that sets up not bad. You have a tradable, if you're short thing, and you're long it right now in your best portfolio, but you kind of got a tradable out. I mean, it takes out 95. So let's just say you hypothetically were thinking, okay, I think Western Digital could start to leak here. Seagate's still ugly, and you know Western Digital is, you know, the leader here. But, you know, sometimes they can follow the laggards as well. It's down a little bit here in the pre-market with the Seagate trading down. But in a short, I mean, it starts trading 95.5, you're out. So you risk a buck and a half here right now if you can get it off at 94. I don't mind that setup trading it from the short side. I'm not trying to scare you out of your investment, but it's been a nice little pop-up right to that old resistance point.
Yeah, a couple tops in that area, too. S&P's leaking a little bit, 24.41, 24.42, up $2 on the session here. Really a quiet range here during the show, but we'll sure we'll get some fireworks off the open. I just want to go back up here. Downward Dog is asking about TROV, and I don't want to neglect once again, a stock, lower price stock here. Let me see if there's any news on it before I make any comments.
I don't think so. There's no trading on it, really.
5,000
shares, but that's all just crossed 144.
Yeah. I mean, it had a nice day yesterday. Looks like it's moving up here. Once again, my comment on these stocks, if you buy it at $1.45, the most you can lose is $1.45. looks like a little bit open between 150 and 2, but not great with these penny stocks. What else did we
They're hard. I mean, they're so, like we said yesterday, they're so headline dependent. You know, if you come out with a good headline, the things can pop and sometimes double. Come out with a bad headline, they can lose 50% in a day. Speculative capital only in the penny stock. I started, it seems like everybody starts their career in the penny stocks, don't they, Joel? But, you know, back in 96, 97, this was before I was at Bright Trading. That was my first nibbling into the market, trading stocks on the Vancouver Stock Exchange, the penny stocks. And I remember my first one was like 96, and it was like Net Nanny Software. That was like my first ever stock purchase. And it came in a newsletter to me, and this Net Nanny Software was going to be the thing that protected kids from the internet. And it was the major craze, and the stock went from like 10 cents up to like over $3. And I was like, man, I am hooked on this, you know, stock market stuff. And I played the penny stocks for a couple of years and started to go slowly get into the bigger stocks and into the tech bubble. And we were talking 97, 98, so the tech bubble was good. And, you know, I had a lot of fun then because I was buying tech stocks and they were going straight up. So I thought I was a market genius, although I was just a beneficiary of the bull market and the techs. And then, you know, I started up right in 1999 and learned like I was doing everything wrong before. And luckily I did. Just in time, my timing was right, because then we had the tech burst in 2000 and 2001, the tech bubble burst. So fun times of the penny stocks. So that's where I started.
All right. We didn't even touch on imbalances here. We got 2 minutes before we conclude the show. Wow. With the S&Ps just up a few points, mixed imbalance. Have you seen anything good?
They are mixed. Yep. Baba, who is just a monster, 121,000 shares to buy. I got to think it's going to take out 150 today. I think there's going to be some size there. I think he could run into a little bit of trouble, but I think it might take it out here today, the $150 handle there for Alibaba. Big buy imbalance again. It seems to be a theme there every morning, this buy Alibaba. We already talked about U.S. Steel, 44,000 shares to buy in U.S. Steel. Target, 67,000 to buy. We know that's trading higher because of their guidance there. Full disclosure, I have a position now on in Target. Pfizer, 27,000 to sell. Colgate, 36,000 to sell. GE, 20,000 to sell. Small. AT&T, 69,000 to sell. Got downgraded today. HPQ, 32,000 to sell. They're all pretty small. You know, it's kind of disappointing because the institutions are so holding, you know, their cards close to their vest here lately that they're not putting out the orders until like 9:25, 9:28. So all these numbers change in the last 2 minutes. So, you know, you can get a feel for a couple institutions that put their orders out there early, but really the real size comes in at 9:28, 9:29, sometimes even 30 seconds before the market opens. That's when they start showing their hand.
All right, real quick, Coca-Cola. Building some support in the lower 44 handle. So you made four lows. They had the nice day yesterday. So let's see if I get a two-day pop up here, maybe to the $45 area. And, Des, before you let you go, looking at this Baba chart, I know we talked about 135 on the downside, kind of missed the boat here. But do you think it's time just to, like, go a little farther out and, like, just buy some 160 calls, like up 160s and just let this thing run, come to Papa here? Or you still a little leery if this breaks?
You know how I like buying options, so you know I won't
sell
play
puts.
It that way.
Sell
I
puts.
Like, yeah, I don't like paying premium, and I don't like, and there'll be a lot of premium in Alibaba. It's always say, you know, if I'm bullish the stock, I buy the stock.
Buy the stock. Okay.
And, you know, and maybe options are a nice way to play, especially if you don't have a ton of capital. It's a nice way to get exposure, a nice way to get big exposure. And you can make a lot of money trading options. I've always just been more of a fan that if I'm bullish the stock, I buy the stock. So, and, you know, and then I can put targets on. I don't have to worry about the time premium killing me that I'm paying and deteriorating over time. So I've always made, when I've been an options trader, I've always made more money selling options than buying options.
All right.
But Baba, but, you know, from a bullish standpoint, you know, we've been bullish Baba here for a little bit since the sales guidance. We were saying back in the 130s, I liked it on pullbacks. Here it is breaking out to new all-time highs. I mean, I'm going to stay on the Baba train. It's, you know, that was a hell of a, you know, report they had back on the guidance raise back on the 7th of June. And then the 8th obviously showed it when the big pop. So I'm still a fan.
All right. Spencer, you want to wrap up today's show and preview the final show of the week?
Yeah. On our show tomorrow, we have one of our listeners, Thankfulness, will be on. That's her Twitter handle. Lauren is her name. She'll be on the show tomorrow at 8:35. As far as I just wanted to cover a couple more ratings, actually, that I just crossed my radar this morning. I did see that Rosenblatt had initiated coverage on TD Ameritrade and E-Trade at a buy, and Charles Schwab only got a new. And Joel, I have a question for you. Let me pull up this rating here. What was it? It was someone initiating, or upgrading from, it was between Outperform and like Screaming By, but I didn't know the difference between their rating. That's what it was. Raymond James upgrading Fast and All. Outperform to Strong By. What's the difference, Joel?
Outperform? I mean, they just mean they're super bullish. They want you to put market orders out in the pre-market.
But now it's a strong buy.
It's such a strong buy that it's going to outperform the market.
It's going to outperform the outperform. All right, anyway, I just wanted to get that. As far as a cast, you know the deal by now. You can catch it on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher just by searching for pre-market or Benzinga, or you can catch the whole show again as it aired on Benzinga TV, which is our YouTube channel, so youtube.com/BenzingaTV. Have a good rest of your day, and we'll see you folks on Friday.